Ron patted him on the shoulder. "We could always do with another hand in the kitchens," he said. "Just say the word, mate."
"Well, it's very kind of you, and when I pull another tissue out of a box, I'll always remember you blokes at the Opera House, but..."
"There he is."
The jailer and the captain of the guard were jogging along the quay. The jailer was waving encouragingly at him.
Nah, it's all right. You don't have to run," he shouted. "We got a pardon for you."
"Pardon?" said Rincewind.
"That's right."
The jailer reached him and fought for breath.
"Signed by the Prime Minister," he managed. "Says you're a good bloke and we're not to hang you."
He straightened up.
"Mind you, we wouldn't do that anyway, not now. Best bloody escape we've ever bloody had since Tin Head Ned."
Rincewind looked down at the writing on the official lined prison notepaper.
"Oh, good," he said weakly. "At least someone thinks I didn't steal the damn thing."
"Oh, everyone knows you stole it," said the jailer happily. "But after that escape, well, and the chase, eh? Bluey here says he's never seen anyone run like you, and that's a fact."
The guard punched Rincewind playfully on the arm.
"Good on you, mate," he said, grinning. "But we'll catch you next time."
Rincewind looked blankly at the pardon.
"You mean I'm getting this for being a good sport?"
"No worries," said the jailer. "And there's a queue of farmers saying if you want to steal one of their sheep next time, that'd be bonza, just so long as they get a verse in the ballad."
Rincewind gave up.
"What can I say?" he said. "You keep one of the best condemned cells I've ever stayed in, and I've been in a few."
He looked at the glow of admiration in their faces and decided that since fortune had been kind, it was time to give something back.
"I'd take it kindly, though, if you'd never, ever redecorate that cell."
"Nah worries. Here, I thought we ought to give you this," said the jailer, handing him a little gift-wrapped package. "Got no use for it now, eh?"
Rincewind unwrapped the hempen rope.
"I'm lost for words," he said. "How thoughtful. I'm bound to find lots of uses for it. And what's this? Sandwiches?"
"You know that sticky brown stuff you made? Well, all the lads tried it, and they all went, yuck. And then they all wanted some more. So we tried cooking up a batch," said the jailer. "I was thinking of going into business. You don't mind, do you?"
"No worries. Be my guest."
"Good on ya."
Someone else wandered up as he watched them hurry away.
"I heard you were going back," said Bill Rincewind. "Want to stay on here? I had a word with your dean. He gave you a bloody good reference."
"Did he? What did he say?"
"He said if I could get you to do any work for me, I'd be lucky," said Bill.
Rincewind looked around at the city glistening under the rain.
"It's a nice offer," he said, "but, oh, I don't know, all this sun, sea, surf and sand wouldn't be good for me, thanks all the same."
"You sure?"
"Yes."
Bill Rincewind held out his hand.
"No worries," he said. "I'll send you a card at Hogswatch and some bit of clothing that doesn't fit properly. I'd better get back to the university now. I've got all the staff up on the roof mending the leaks."
And that was it. Rincewind sat for a while watching the last of the passengers get aboard and took a final look around the rain-soaked harbour. Then he stood up.
"Come on then," he said.
The luggage followed him up the gangplank and they went home. It rained. The flood gurgled along ancient creek beds and overflowed, spreading out into a lacework of gullies and rivulets. Further rain ensued. Near the centre of the last continent, where waterfalls streamed down the flanks of a great red rock that steamed with the heat of a 10,000-year summer, a small, naked boy sat in the branches of a tree, along with three bears, several possums, innumerable parrots, and a camel. Apart from the rock, the world was a sea. And someone was wading through it. He was an old man carrying a leather bag on his back. He stopped waist deep in swirling water and looked up at the sky. Something was coming. The clouds were twisting, spinning, leaving a silvery hole all the way up to the blue sky, and there was a sound that you might get if you took a roll of thunder and stretched it out thin. A dot appeared, growing bigger. The man raised a skinny arm, and suddenly it was holding an oval of wood that trailed a cord, which hit his hand with a slap. The rain stopped.
The last few drops hammered out a little rhythm that said, "Now we know where you are, we'll be coming back." The boy laughed. The old man looked up, caught sight of him, and grinned. He tucked the bull roarer into the string around his waist and took up a boomerang painted in more colours than the boy had ever seen in one place together. The man tossed it up and caught it a couple of times, and then, glancing sideways to make sure his audience was watching him, he hurled it. It rose into the sky and went on climbing, long past the point where any normal thing should have started to fall back. It grew bigger, too. The clouds parted to let it through, and then it stopped, as if suddenly nailed to the sky. Like sheep, which having been driven to a pasture can now spread out at their leisure, the clouds began to drift. Afternoon sunlight sliced through into the still waters. The boomerang hung in the sky, and the boy thought he would have to find a new word for the way the colours glowed. In the meantime, he looked down at the water and tried out the word he'd been taught by his grandfather, who'd been taught it by his grandfather, and which had been kept for thousands of years for when it would be needed. It meant the smell after rain. It had, he thought, been well worth waiting for. That is the end of The Last Continent. It was written by Terry Pratchett and read by Nigel Planer.